The unexamined life is not worth living. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you instant inspiration from the campus. The unexamined life is not worth living. These are the words of our wonderful philosophical friend, Socrates. What does it mean, the unexamined life is not worth living? Well, when you think about what you're thinking about, you're examining something. Mm-hmm. When you're thinking about driving the car, you're examining it. When you think about doing other things, you're examining it. Now, he says the unexamined life is not worth living. Well, I would sort of turn it around from my point of view and say the unexamined life is the most worthwhile life to live. The unexamined life is the most worthwhile life to live. Boy, Herb, you're sure going in the back door there, aren't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Think about it. And think about it. And think about it. Your father says to you, think before you act. Think before you speak. Don't just give it off the top. Don't just, you know, shoot me the information that just comes to your mind serendipitously, but give it to me directly. And what do you say? You say, but, and your parents say, or your teacher says, think about it. Use your brain. That's what you got a brain for, to consider what it is you're talking about. Don't just give it off the top, because you give it off the top and there's no thought behind it. There's no wisdom behind it. There's no consideration behind it. Well, here at the University of Healing, we teach, think your first thought. In fact, try to catch it. Catch your first thought and follow it. Catch your first thought and follow it. Now let's just, I have more fun going back to children. Let's go back to children. Children say the first thing that comes to their mind. They're right off the top. They're beautiful. They come up with something sometimes that just, you know, shake your boat. Because you'd thought of it at some point in your life, but you'd never really verbalized it like they do. And little children see things, and they respond to what they see. When they see another entity or another beingness, you know, they respond to it and say about it, and they don't say a thing. And little children never think of being hurt by another person. Little children never think that some bad man or some bad world is going to come along and hurt them. Where do they get, why do they get hurt sometimes?
Because of the parents.
Because the parents think that. The parents say, no, don't talk to any strangers, you know, and don't take candy from anybody. My gosh, when we were kids, we'd go out trick-or-treating on Halloween, and we would take stuff from everybody's house. And if they wouldn't trick-or-treat us, we'd put soap on their windows or something like that, or wax. And that's hard to get off. But they all gave. They all brought out a bag. They brought it. Some were healthy nuts, you know, and they'd bring us apples. And some were just nice people. They'd bring us candy bars. Say, take all you want. You know, eat all you want. And we'd go home with a big shopping bag full of goodies. All five of us kids, man, we really hauled in. But we wore costumes. I had a box one time, a big old box that fit over me like this here, and I cut the hole off my head and put a hat on and stuff. I don't know what it represented, but it was fun. And some of the other kids, they had things over their head that they couldn't see. And so one of the rules in our community was that on Halloween night, drivers are to use extreme caution, because kids can't always see where they're going, because their costumes sometimes hide their vision. And so the cars go creeping along the road, really concerned, lovingly. The drivers went, those damn kids, they should have the proper type of cars. They said, okay. One night, no problem. And then they said, hey kid, I'm coming. I got a car here, you know. And, oh, you know, they look around. But It was wonderful. We had more fun. And we never had to worry about having somebody spiking our candy. Putting razor blades in the candy? Yeah. Or putting poison in the candy or other things? That's been done in recent years. But that's because of the consciousness of the people. Now, do you think they ever had terrorism back then? My goodness sakes, no. You think they ever had all sorts of other things? We didn't even lock our doors. Didn't have to. And it's a strange thing when people do things like that. Because what they're doing is they're considering all the possibilities. And when they're considering all the possibilities, then they're going to be very careful. The only time we lock our door, my dad would say, is to let our friends know that we're not home. Otherwise, our doors are always open. And people came in our front door just as much as they came in our back door and our basement door, and they crawl up on the roof of the house, two-story house, and come in through that little cleft story on the top of the house. Oh, we had lots of activity at our house. And why people weren't killed? I mean, because you're up on a roof and you're doing all these crazy, stupid things and you're little kids. Because our parents never even imagined we'd get hurt. Never even imagined we'd get hurt. Because their first thought was, hey, have fun. You know? Their thought was, no, don't be careful. Don't. Be careful now. Yeah, don't be careful. Be careful. Remember, there's all these cars out there and all these things are going on. Remember, now be careful, be careful, be careful. And that is taking away the joy of the first thought of the children. The children are absolutely trustworthy, trusting. And they believe in the things that they're doing. Now, whether this is what Socrates was talking about or not, we'll never know. But the unexamined life is worth living. The unexamined life where we live from the very heart of ourselves, from the very depth of our inner beingness, from the excitement of who we are. That's what life's all about. Now, we look at the birds out here, the hummingbirds at the feeder, and they're just having a ball. One guy seems to be the usher, and he ushers people in and ushers people out. And then he stands there, and he's about the only one who really stands on the stick and drinks without fluttering his wings, you know, conserving energy. Now, what's he doing? What's he doing, Ellen?
Being the boss.
He's being himself and having fun, right?
Right.
He's being the boss. And does he care if anyone else is there? No. He goes over to the bushes and checks to see. He says, okay, you guys stay over here. I got the show going. But that's the first thought. Now, what would be your second thought? Your second thought, they're having a fight. They're angry. They're mad at each other. They're always fighting. They're always doing, well, bully, bully, bully. So you put that thought in motion and you get it. Now, what is IROC's desire for itself and the world?
Peace.
Peace. Now, why would we think anything different? Now, do you think that the Iraqi people are ugly, bad, mean people? Do you think that they're not good people? It's the leaders. The leaders who set the thing up and were after it. And the minute they got rid of the leaders, then the Iraqis thought, oh boy, you know, here, it was good. We didn't know that it could be better, but it was good. And now we haven't got our leader. They say when, what's his name? In Moscow,
Stalin.
When Stalin was there, he did a great job, but he killed a lot of people by the millions. And after Stalin was out of office, I think he died. After Stalin died, many people were saying, "Oh, it was so nice when Stalin was here. It was so great." And they only remember what they knew because they didn't know any better. It's like people who live in a country where they don't have shoes and they're walking around without shoes, perfectly happy. And then people come along with shoes, and then all of a sudden they want shoes. But that's the second thought. Our natural self can handle virtually anything and does. How do you think we survived throughout all these many years? Because if we had to have everything that we have today to survive, now look, just as a little unexamined thought here. Do you think that the historical record of the Bible was a total fable? Do you think that Methuselah lived as long as he did or didn't? Do you think that the leaders of the early Old Testament lived as long as they did? Noah, I don't have their ages at the moment, but they lived hundreds of years, 500 years, you know, many, many hundreds of years. Do you think they lived that long? If they lived that long, and the sanitation was so bad, and the food was so bad, and the conditions were so bad, why did they live so long? Why did they live so long? And why didn't they have problems? And Sarah, what did she do? At 85 or something like that, she had a child. That's long past the childbearing age. Now, oh, sure, she was a miracle. Well, there's lots of miracles in our life, too. Lots of miracles. We're talking to our little 98-year-old lady who is running around like a spring chicken. You think that she is just a post-teenager, just doing great, having a ball. But her first thought is, I'm having fun. Her first thought is, I'm being me. Her first thought is, I don't know any limitations. Her first thought, somebody give me a hard time, I'll take it right to them and I'll say, now what is your intention with this hard time? You know? And people did it to her. People did it to her. They tried to slow her down at times and she'd say, what is your intention with this hard time? And they couldn't come up with an answer. If they had come up with their first thought would have been to give you a hard time. All right, now we know where we stand. Mm-hmm. You know, but when she shook him up like that, you know, that's why you agree with your adversary quickly, because your adversary loses all his power the moment you agree with him. Your first thought, your unexamined thought, I'm whole and perfect. You say you're whole and perfect, look at you. I'm rich. You say you're rich, where's your money? I'm happy. You say you're happy, all the experiences that you've had would be enough to make a man cry. Well, it didn't make me cry. I just went along with the experiences I had, not judging them, and realizing that this too shall pass. No big deal. No big deal. When you realize this too shall pass, then you don't get all hung up about it. You don't think you have to judge it. And you see, that's what an examined life would be. Judging. You're judging your life to see how you do these things. And it sounds so good. Here Mr. Socrates says, the unexamined life is not worth living. Now what Mr. Socrates means is, are you listening to your own divine inner self, or are you listening to someone else? I told the story how Socrates was talking to these kids and teaching them to think, teaching them to use their head, use their brain to think, and have their first thought be impressive. And then the parliament was passing some rules, I doubt it, they were passing some rules about abortion, that the girls could not abort a child. And so they discussed it, and they said, even if the girl was raped by some evil person or some maniac or, you know, whatever the case may be, and the parliament says, that's right. And so Socrates was talking to the young men, and he said, now, what if your sister were involved? What if your sister wanted to make this decision for herself? Well, of course, she could do whatever she wants to. You know, my dad is in the parliament. Well, the law should be true for everybody, Socrates said. Well, they shouldn't have that law then. Well, think about these things. So then the boys went home and told their parents these things who were in the parliament. And they said, oh, Socrates is teaching that kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. Not realizing at all what Socrates was teaching. Mm-hmm. And this is how it sometimes happened. The boys took the first thought, oh, hey, ooh, my goodness. And the fathers took the thought, oh, he's teaching them to think that way, rather than he's teaching them to think. And this is what we want to learn to do, is to teach ourselves to think, to take the first thought and act upon it. And the day that I see any of you acting upon your first thought, I won't see you. Hmm. You'll be divine.
Yeah. see another in another. But then you will see us for the first time.
Yeah, then I'll see you for the first time, right? But you see, when you act upon your first thought, when you train yourself to act upon it, and you act upon it, you will transcend all limitation. You will transcend all cause and effect. You will be it. You will be absolute, and you'll be wonderful. Like that. So with that note, let's say, I love you, I love you, I love you. Think about these things. They're wonderful. I love you.